lay out the schedule. As I mentioned last week, we're going to try to get the Rosh Yeshiva to give some of the shiurim, since I'm just really filling in. So next week, Beth Hashem, Rabbi Willig will address us on some more complex issues on Esher Kalim. We're going to discuss halachas of passing ovens and dishwashers and microwaves. And then whatever else we would like to discuss. So that's next week at the regular time. And the same thing we'll do for Tefillah Kalim. I think we have one more class after next week before Pesach. So that'll be the first of three sessions on Tefillah Kalim. We'll have the other two after Pesach. So I'll give the first two, Beth Hashem, and Rabbi Willig will give the third. So as I mentioned, I wanted to supplement with the issue.
Okay, April, can we have to reduce like the garrison yield?
Yeah, we'll probably do that. I have to see the timing. Pace is coming also, so we'll see how that works out. We'll try to break it up. Okay, let's pick up where we left off last week.
On the schedule, there's no class.
Week before Pesach, no class?
No one says it's just
week before
Pesach.
Pesach Tuesday. Yeah. Whatever the schedule says.
What's good?
Either way.
118 and then 28th.
However it works out, we have 6 weeks, whatever the schedule dates are. You can print the schedule. But it'll be two, and I will give in the next year, and then two on the field of Kalim I'll give, and then I will give the last year. Okay. We had pointed out the fundamental dispute that the Rishonim have, where perhaps the majority of the Rishonim maintain that Libun, that's necessary to kasha something that was Nivla Idea, or it's fundamentally different from Hagolah. Hagolah is polate, it spits out the Yisr, and Libun is Sorif. I pointed out that the Shach at the toward the end of Simon Kuf Chaval quotes that in the name of the Ra'ah. However, there is a significant minority opinion, maybe it's not even minority, in some sense of numbers, quoted in the Chuvas Maimini that Libun is also poly. So the main afkamina between the two is whether or not you could apply Kivolo Kapolto concerning temperature of Libun. If you know that the Blia only went in at, let's say, 500 degrees, okay, is it enough to heat up that item to 500 degrees, or do you need the highest form of Libun, which would be Nitzotus Nitzin or Achitosh Kvipasso, which Rabbi Tendler indicated based on lab experiments would be 900 degrees. So according to those who say that Libun is so rafe, you'd have to have the sheer strafe, so that would have to be 900. According to those who say that Libun is a form of Klita, so you perhaps could apply Kibbolah Kachpolto in temperature as well. The reason I say perhaps is because that seems to be another dispute concerning Hagalah. If you have an item that was nivla in a temperature, let's say 180 degrees through liquid heat, so do you need 212 in order to get that out, boiling, which is the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, or is it enough to have 180? So in other words, the Shaila is, when the Shulchan Aruch insists upon roskin for agola, for boiling water, is that only because of suffix, because you're not sure whether it's what temperature it went in? But if you know exactly what temperature went in, then even that temperature would be okay. It's categories. So we noted last week that Moshe Feinstein concerning kashering chalav stam equipment to chalav akum. So he says that you shouldn't rely only on the pasteurization temperature with water, which to run a water cycle, which would only be 160 or 170, you should bring it up to 212. But I just want to note that I wasn't aware of this when I gave this year last week. In other tshuvas, Rav Moshe does seem to indicate that me'ikar adin, he would agree that you should apply kibbolah kachpolto at least by hagala concerning temperature, but better to be machmir. Rabbi Neuberger mentioned last year that it seems that the majority opinion is that you certainly don't have to go higher than 212. And he gave the example of a pressure cooker. A pressure cooker gets the temperature hotter than 212. But nonetheless, the poskim assume that all it needs is regular hagola.
It's just for a Cleveland 2 if it goes higher than 900 degrees.
No, so 900 is the absolute highest, right? Because that's, even if you take the machmir position that it's sorafe, so it's sorafe there. You don't need higher than 900. So we just pointed out, just to review, that to allow the highest temperature that you used it at for Libun has to assume two things. Number one, that Libun is not sorafe, it's polate. and therefore he should be able to apply kivolo kach polto. And number two, that once you say kivolo kach polto, that applies not only to the method by which it went in, if it went in with a kli rishon or iril kli rishon or a kli sheni or nitzotzos, but also the temperature at which it went in. So both of those issues are totally b'machlokis. So the hagos, the tshuvas maimini, who's mekel, to heat up a, I think his case was, he was heating up a, something that was on the stove that they used to roast in. So they were kashering that by bringing it up to the same temperature that they had originally brought it to. And they heat up the stove again. So that is, so he's assuming two things. Number one, the leaven is kabbalah kachpolta also, it's an issue of plita. And number two, that you apply kabbalah kachpolta to the temperature. So we noted that both of those are debatable, but that is certainly one of the snifim that's used concerning kashering ovens, which will be discussed with the Shem next week.
So what's that, whether you need a cleaner too?
Whether you what?
Whether you
what?
Whether you have to take away the mouth.
Okay. I don't think that would be enough to mean for the following reason. Because we mentioned last week that when you do Leibon on something at 900 degrees, even according to those that say that Leibon is polar, but it's also solar. It is. The fact is that it is. The only question is, do you need that strafer quality? Or is it enough to just have the plita? And the nafkamina is, well, you don't have the strafer. So that which you're quoting correctly from the Shulchan Aruch, that when we do libun, you don't have to bother cleaning the kli, that's going to be true according to everybody, because the bottom line is that when you apply fire and you put in coals, it's going to burn out the behem as well.
Is this for libun kal also?
Libun kal is a further dispute. We didn't really discuss libun kal, so we'll leave that. But libun kal, the Prima Gadim says, is poli. That's on the Sefer HaGolos cable. But you probably could have the same two sheets. It's probably not sorry, because it's not the temperature of 900 degrees, so it's probably only cold. Which makes sense, because they make a parallel to HaGolos. They say, whatever HaGolos works, we can call it. Okay, let's continue. Livon is required for things that are used on the fire. What's called used on the fire? So, we'll come back to that question a little later, because it's instructive to see the forum in which that emerges. There is a dispute amongst Rishonim about how to kasher a frying pan. If you deep fat fry in a lot of oil, so then everyone agrees that hagala will be enough. But if you're only using a little bit of oil, so there we have machlokis between the Rav Yoh on the one hand, whose sheet is agreed upon by the Rosh, who holds that Hagol is enough because there's a little bit of oil, so it's a liquid medium. And Rabbeinu Yoel, father of the Rav Yoh, who holds that it needs Leibun. So Rabbeinu Yoel's logic to be machmir that it needs Leibun is because the oil very often burns out, the lava daite. So it could be that, I don't know, he might even be machmir even if you think it didn't, because milta l'rami inish lava daite, you don't really pay attention. And since the oil burnt out, so you have solid food directly on the frying pan, and therefore it should require leaven. The Rosh and the Rav Yoh are mekel for two considerations. First consideration, I believe, I did not get a chance to double check this, but I think it's way to Torah quote to Rosh, that we'll see later, there's a machlokis about Rov Tashmish versus Miyot Tashmish. So most of the time, the oil does not burn out. You don't want it to burn out, because you want the oil there. So even the minority of times that it burns out, where it's actually ala esh, but most of the time it's through a liquid medium. That Nakuza is actually totally the machlokes, but I think the Rosh holds that way. And Nakuza number two, that even if it does burn out, it's not a problem. Because there's an oil seal between the food and the pan, there's still lachluchis shemen, and that's enough to consider it as nivla al yidei hamashke, and not nivla al yidei ish. That's a machlokes concerning a machvas, it requires leaving or not. Lamaisa, in Yoridei, the Mechaber's Machmir, at least. The way the Gra seems to put it as a chumrah, not really mikra din, but as a chumrah, concerning shari surim, right, that if it becomes tray frying pan, would require leaven chamor. Pointed out the last week, the tshuva of the Chasam Sofer, that if it was an ein ben yom or butzer, and then you cooked a pizza in it, so that might not be called isura bar. Because it's not quite basa b'chalav, and the same, so it might be because it's ein ben yom of basa. So that might, or you can get away with Hagala if you go with a Sam Sofet approach, that that's not called Isurabala, and as he pointed out, the majority of Psak is that when you have a Teravala, Hagala is always sufficient. That we discussed last week. But outside of that case, if it's really Isurabala, the Mechaber requires Libun. In Orachayim, in Simen Tassan Aleph, the Mechaber is Mekel, concerning Pesach and Chametz, that you could do Hagala. And the Beis Yosef seems to explain it based on a kind of a Svechzveka. Because maybe the Rosh is right, and you always need the only Hagala on a Machlas, and even if he's wrong, but Chametz very well might be Heter Bala. How you do it, that's a massive Machlokis, which is discussed by the Mishnah Berurah at length in Simen Tassan Aleph, as to whether Chametz, since it's mutter when you first put it in, it should be called hetera, or the fact that it's shmo olav the whole year, and on Pesach it's aser, and it's still chametz the rest of the year, it's just, it's kosher the rest of the year, so maybe it should be called isura bola. So since there are many rishonim all hetera bola, so we should be able to combine those two snifim lachel, and therefore the mechaber is mekel for to hagala on a machvas for Pesach. Happens to be that the Ramah notes the fact that those are machmir to require libun, but he writes, and that's a klal that the Ramah has throughout Hilchos Pesach, that whenever the Libun is only a Chumrah, so we'll allow you to get away with Libun Kal. That repeats itself again and again in the Ramah. So a lot of times when he's Machmir on the Mechaber to require Libun, but if he's used that as only a Chumrah, so he only requires Libun Kal. So the Ramah Baskin's Libun Kal is enough for a frying pan on Pesach. Again, practically, it's not so posh to cash a frying pan for Pesach with Libun Kal, because you have to clean it very well. Poskim already know that it's not so easy to clean a frying pan. So if you can get it clean, so you can do Libun Kal or Hagala, but if you can't, so then there's no eitzah other than do Libun Chomor, which in our modern frying pans would probably make the frying pan die. So, but that's just a practical. Yeah.
Don't they have like frying pans that run out like sticking and stuff like that? Like
non-stick?
I think that's what it's called.
Right, you mean the Teflon? So if you're using a frying pan without any oil, so then the Rosh would agree that you would...
You're going to use oil in that situation. It's not like it's going to...
But according to the Rush, if you use oil, use oil. The fact that it's non-stick, I don't think matters. If it is non-stick, so A, if you didn't use oil, then it for sure needs Libun. And if it for sure needs Libun, you're stuck. Because with a Teflon pan, for sure you can't do Libun because it's going to ruin the whole Teflon coating. So practically, if you're not using oil on Teflon, so then you're in trouble. But you still have that Chasam Sofer to maybe... utilize depending on how it became trif. Okay. Yes.
Wait. Well, what did the Chasam Sofer get?
Just because we're on a tight schedule, we went through it last week. Okay. Yeah.
I think even when it's been
not bas b'chalav of mamish. No, bas b'chalav. If it's a ben yom of chalav and you put basr in it, that's called isur bal. Okay. So show me the makoros and we'll. As far as I saw from Chasam Sofer, I think it's good. That's not for now.
So you have within 24 hours and then it's cooled if you're
not if they're dealing with fresh flavor. Okay, we have to go back to your day and move on. Okay. So the Rush, so that's the issue of Machvas. But let's get back to the assumption that both the Rush and Rabbeinu Yoel are making. If there's no oil, then that's called Tashmish Oide Eish. Now the classic Tashmish Oide Eish of the Mishnah and of Avodah Zarah is Ashpud V'Askula. Right, so it's something like where the food itself is touching the fire. The Russian, the shpud, I don't know what Nasko is, something like shpud, I guess. I'm saying that because of what we're about to say. Because if it would be a frying pan, then the Ra'ah that I'm about to mention wouldn't make sense. The Russian and Rabbeinu Yoel are assuming that the fact that you have a pan that's mafsik between the fire and the food does not make it shelo al yidei ha'esh. That is called al yidei ha'esh. The definition of yidei ha'esh is dry heat. If there's no water medium, no liquid medium between the food and the pan, it doesn't matter whether the fire is directly in contact with the food or whether the fire is directly in contact with the pan and the pan is directly in contact with the food. However, the ra'ah is makel on the frying pans to require agala, not because of the svar of the rosh that it's called tashmisho al yidei mashkin, but rather because he says that that's not called Tashmish Oidei Ha'esh. Because since the frying pan is mafsik between the Eish and the food, that's called Tashmisho, it's not Tashmish Oidei Rosin, but that's not called Tashmish Oidei Ha'esh. In other words, the language of the Ra'ah is in order to be Tashmish Oidei Ha'esh, it has to be Ro'ef Neho Eish. Meaning there can't be any hefsik between the Eish and the food. I don't think it means that the Eish has to lick the food. I think it means that they're just air between. There's no kli between.
Roasting,
right? That's the case of the spit. That's what Binyamin is asking about the askel. And the askel, I got the impression, was a griddle. So that sounds like it's not like the raw. Unless it's the kind of griddle where you stick it on and you revolve it around and around. I don't know. So it seems to be that the raw is in the minority. It seems to be that chiddush of the raw is in the minority. And even the rush was makel by the frying pan is for a different reason. It seems to be that the majority of the Rishonim consider tishmisho al yidei haor to be anytime that there's no liquid medium between the food and the pot. So that would mean that, let's say, if you heated up a tray piece of pizza by mistake in a fleshik pan, or in any pan, or a kosher piece of pizza in a fleshik pan, and the tam was still ben yomo, so then you're in trouble. So that would need liban chamor, and if you could do it, you could, but usually you can't. Okay, yeah, other question?
I just want to make a comment that it seems to be related to the idea of Pesach, Korban Pesach, and called roasting in the vessel or not. Is that called roasting?
Sli Kedor.
Yes.
Sli Kedor. Okay. You can't necessarily join the two issues together because they might have different Kedorim, but yeah, that's a general issue. But by Hilchos Shabbos too. Blast from the past, it's Achazanish about one of the coolest he has, why you could reheat boiled chicken near the fire, which would be a problem with Sli Achavishal,
right,
is that maybe Sli Kedor is called Bishal.
Right.
But it might not work here, though, for issues of Liban, because...
No, only the sense that it's called
yeah.
Sleeve, that's all.
Yeah, good point. All right, so now that the majority opinion is that a dry connection to the pot is called Eidei'esh, so what about the following case? Apparently, not too uncommon. Let's say I cook noodles and cheese in a fleishig frying pan. Fleishig pot, for that matter. And it starts out pretty liquidy, because I'll say put in some milk and everything, and everything's very liquidy. But then the milk all boils out. So by the time, by mistake, not by mistake, whatever the case is, so by the time I'm ready to serve, I realize the liquid boiled out, and I realize the fleishig pot. So now I have something that's not a frying pan, this is really abnormal, but that's what happened. So I have something which is supposed to have liquid in it, but the liquid boiled out. So it's like the frying pan case, but the mitigating factor here is the fact that that's super abnormal. So does that require liban chomer or not? Yeah, you have noodles and cheese. And so you start out with, let's say, either very liquidy cottage cheese, so you have some whey there, or you put in some milk. So if the pot turns out to be fleishig, so then you're going to have, so normally, if it's liquid, all you need is agola. But if the liquid boils out, so then you're gonna have to have liban chamor.
Well, but the milk itself is milk. It's not like oil is just a regular medium. Milk is more than
a good
medium. It's a milk.
That's a good point. So that's something I'm not gonna discuss just to save a little time. The Shach and the Pesachei Tshuva discussed that. I got the impression that the majority of Pesach is that liquid is liquid. If you cook glatt treif liquid in a pan, that's still called liquid. There are those who say that pshat in liquid that only requires hagola is where the liquid is kosher. So you have a kosher medium dividing between the treif and the walls. But the majority opinion, you take a look at the shach, it quotes the Ramah and Mipanu, and there's a Pesachei Tshuva elaborates on that, but we don't have time to go into that. The majority opinion is that liquid is liquid. If you cook treif, and that's what's assumed in the whole kashrus industry, that the way they kasher, you know, let's say treif runs of liquid oils and things like that, Hagola, you know, you use Liban. According to the Machmor tradition, you would need Liban then. So we're assuming that in order to have Liban, you at least need a solid food. So getting back to our story, you had the liquid pot of food, and the liquid burnt out. So the Rush proves his frying pan case by saying that everyone knows that no one's Machmor for Liban there. So it's a raya that even though the oil burnt out, we don't have to worry about it. The Rush takes it for granted that in that kind of case, all you need is hagala. So must be, because there's still lachluchis, there's still some moisture, and therefore it doesn't require liban. So as someone pointed out to me in the name of Rosenzweig, one person's reductio ad absurdum is another person's inachinami. So the prima godin in one place, I think it's a theorem prima godin on this, like it's all in the safe hagalas kelim. The Prima Godin points out that no, if you know it dried out, and we're Machmer and Machvas, at least by Shari Surim, so then you're stuck. So I got the impression from the conglomeration of poskim that the Hagolas Kalim say for your quotes is that, at least in that case, we follow the rush. That in a frying pan, we're machmir against the rush, but in a pot where it was really supposed to be cooked with liquid, but b'mikra, the liquid boiled out, so there we would be lenient to allow Hagolas. I asked Rabbi Savolovsky this question that came up halacha l'maisa, so he had the impression that also that the minigol to make on that. That even if in your particular case of cooking something that was supposed to have liquid in it, but it burned out, and then there's some kind of kashrus problem that you could rely on hagala. But it's not not everyone agrees to that. That sucks. The Prince Adam, as you mentioned, was machmir, and I saw that there were those who were only willing to be makel by chametz. That if you have, let's say, a pot that you normally cook noodles in, and occasionally the water will burn out, so there, together with the kula, the chametz might be a terabal, according to some Rishonim, that there you can make a fagol, but maybe not by shari surim. I got the impression that the majority opinion is that even by shari surim, one could rely on that leniency. If we're not dealing with a frying pan, where it, quite often the oil burns out, but if it's just abnormal.
What's the logic for that? Like, if you know that
right. The logic is probably based on, to some extent, the kula of Rov Tashmisho, which is also a dispute, but that there's a major position in the Rishon that Rov Tashmisho is okay. And I think that's the main
thing. So it's Rov Tashmisho what? So it's like a dinner in Chazaka? It's like you have a Chazaka?
Rov Tashmisho, okay, maybe if we have time, we'll discuss Rov Tashmisho. Otherwise, we'll save it for the Chazara. It's spelled out in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so that's in terms of what's called Tashmisho Ayidei Ha'esh. What is the definition of Liban? So we pointed out that the Yerushalmi says the sparks have to fly, the Bavli says the klipa has to fall off, and the Acharonim point out, and the Rabbi Tendler noted also in his Shurim, that same thing, because when the sparks fly, that metal that's flying out. So it means that the klipa of the pot is falling out. The poskim discussed the issue of self-cleaning ovens. Even if you assume that kashering an oven requires liban chamor, so the majority of psak of contemporary poskim is that self-cleaning ovens are considered liban chamor. And the logic is straightforward, because self-cleaning ovens get up to above 900, and that's the temperature of liban chamor. The reason why that's somewhat of a chiddush is because it doesn't spark, doesn't glow, and there's no klipa coming off. So if you should say quite literally that Liban means it has to spark, that's a siba, not a simen, that's when it gets all burned up, but the self-cleaning ovens are not Liban chomer. And how would you do Liban chomer on a self-cleaning oven? Flame thrower. So you pointed out that doesn't work. But the consensus of poskim is that no, it all depends on temperature. But even if you reject Kibolo Kapolto issues, Liban Chomer is 900. So as long as you bring up the 900, you don't need Nitzotzos Nitzin.
But it's only 900 because that's when Nitzotzos is missing.
So that's assuming that Nitzotzos Nitzin is a Sibur. That's a cause. Because heat also burns, not just fire. So as far as when you get up to 900, so whatever Bliya is there is going to disintegrate. I don't know the science, that's why it was beautiful to hear from Rabbi Tendler, because always quoting his lab experiments in the lab, so I don't have a lab, but my layman's, I just was trying to think, is there any riot to this? You know, it sounds like such a chiddush. So I was thinking that maybe you have a riot to this approach, because my impression is, I might be dead wrong in the Metzias, so I'd be happy to be disproved if you'll tell me. What happens when you put a piece of pottery into an oven at 1,000 degrees? Does it glow? Does it spark? Does it lose its shell? Or it just gets hot? So my layman's layman's approach is that it doesn't spark, it doesn't glow, it doesn't lose its klipa. I might be totally wrong about that. But if I'm right, so then you have a riot this approach. Because theoretically, as we'll see later, you should be able to kasher pottery by putting it into an oven at a temperature of 1,000 degrees. The reason we don't allow it is because we're worried you're going to take it out too early. But theoretically, you would be able to kasher it that way. Even cheres, because cheres is only not kasherable through agala, but it is kasherable through libun. So if that's the case, what you need is sparks. So it sounds like the temperature is enough. But again, it could be that Abe is wrong about the Matthias. So I don't know. So please verify that.
I think the Matthias is that when you're doing the play with libun, you're baking and not really roasting. In other words, the way that you do is
so you're not
the moisture out of the clay.
So it doesn't spark.
Yeah.
Baruch Hashem. Okay. Okay, it will be good to bring a raya to this because it's very mechudash and it's mekubal by, I think, the, I don't know if anyone writes otherwise, but it's mekubal that even those on machmir, let's see the face of the leaving flour in the ovens, but a self-cleaning oven, that you can just run it through a cycle, and the only thing they start clearing about is the door, because the door doesn't get so hot, so some on machmir to cover the door even if they self-clean it. But I know of no posek directly who's machmer in that, but as Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Tendler both noted, it is somewhat of a chiddush because you don't have the filters. Okay, let's move on to Agala. Agala, according to the way most of Rishonim put it, whatever they hold about Livon is maflit. It spits it out into the water that you're boiling it in. There is a minority opinion that's quoted by the Sefer Agala Skelim. It's a Yeshomer in the Meiri. Except the Vodazar, those who want to check it up in the secondary sources on page 323. They quote the Yesh Omrim that Havel is also Soref. Not Soref in this classic sense of fire, meaning it zaps the plita. But the majority opinion is that it's poly. That said, so that leads to the following two questions that have to be dealt with in terms of how Havel works. First question is, Ein Mevatla Nisla Chachila? That Hagala presumably is operating based on the principle that somehow by boiling up water, you're somehow nullifying that taste, getting rid of an osin tam lufgam, or whatever the case is that we'll see in a moment. But why isn't that a problem with Ein Mevatla Nisla Chachila? So, if you take a look at the packet, so Rabbi Tendler collected here in page 1a, all the Rishonim will give the same answer. That's the klal that we have in Yeridea, that Ein Mevatel Nitzchachila only applies when you intend to be Mevatel. You want to get some benefit out of that which you're eating on. But if the intention is not to be Mevatel, and here the intention is to get it out, the fact that it's going to become nullified and go back in, that's not your intention. So Ein Kavanos Levatel, so it's Mutter. The Rashba is even sharper about that you have to say that way. Shem Lo Kain, but Talta Kol Hagola. You don't say like that, so you can't do a goal, and the Torah says you can do a goal. Ela dvar mitelam ein vatla shom. Okay. So that's a pretty easy answer. That's the aim of vatla tefila. If you held of the approach that Hagala burns, right, which is the minority opinion, so the whole question doesn't begin. So you can destroy it, nothing vatla. But it's normally assumed that it is polite, so that's what leads to that question. The second question is that just like what comes up goes down, and what goes out goes in. When you boil up a water in a pot to get the blia out, so it goes into the water and then goes right back in. So what? So you're back to where you started from. So what did you gain by doing Hagala? The leaven, we understand. If it's polate, so it puts it into the air. If it's Soref, so it blasts it into the void. But in terms of Hagala, it goes out and it goes back in again. So this question has about four or five answers, and those already started the Mishnah Berurah. So in Siman Tafnun Beis, in that long run-on sentence of the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Aleph, he pretty much points out all the answers and points out that if you makpid to do Hagala on Erev Pesach before the Zman Isser, so then you don't have to rely on all of those answers, which you're going to require certain ukimtis as to how you do Hagala. You can just do it straight. But in that line of the Shulchan Aruch, he's showing you a cross section of all the answers. So the answers are as follows, at least those that I'm familiar with. Everybody has the question. It goes out into the water, goes right back in. So first we start with the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that points out that we paskin the Notzin Tam Lufgam is mutter, and that a Kli Einu Ben Yomo is Notzin Tam Lufgam. And the whole reason that you have to kasher a kli that's an Einu Ben Yomo is a gzeira atu ben yomo. But the bottom line is you have to kasher an Einu Ben Yomo. So once we have that, so now we have the following answers. If you hold that Hagala burns, okay, no question. Just like you don't have any bitlus of chila, you don't have any problem that it goes back in because there's nothing to go back in. The water goes into the pot, it seeks out and destroys the molecules, and that's it. But most we've shown them all that it's plita, so that's why they don't like that answer. So they come up with the following approaches. Number one, shishin, which works if you're kashering, let's say, a spoon in a very big pot. It doesn't have to be so big. They point out, like, it would be able to fit 60 spoons in the water. Not so difficult to do that. So So that would work, but it would only work though if you're only kashering one spoon. Let's say you're kashering two spoons, then you need two times that. Let's say you put one spoon in, take it out, put the other spoon in. So then the halacha here, we're going to say it's mistarif. We're not going to say kama kama bottle. Right? When the bliya, the whatever the spoon is absorbed, is going to spit out into the water, even though it's bottle, but then you throw in another spoon, and then that bliya that's in that spoon is going to come out, so you might not have 60 times anymore. So the poskim write that if you're kashering a ben yomo, right, a ben yomo, and you're relying on shishim, you have to make sure that shishim kineged kol hakelim. So that's why when you're kashering in global settings, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't rely on shishim because people are going to throw in pot after pot after pot. So that's, it works, but it's not, you need the okimta of making sure you kasher something that has shishim above it. Now, of course, that only works for throwing the spoon in the pot. But if you're kashering the pot from inside, because the pot itself became treif, and then you're relying on that gemara with the mitzotot nitzin to boil it over, to kasher the rim, that's not going to work no matter what, because the assumption of the poskim is, and mathematically it works out, unless you have a very strange pot, that you're never going to have 60 times of the water inside connected the walls of the pot, unless you have very thin walls and a very big pot. We tried to work out the math in the one other day, but very odd the shaved pot to make that work. So that would mean that if you have a ben yomo pot and you're relying on the answer of shishim, you can't, unless you put that ben yomo pot into a gigantic pot that has 60 times the volume. So, but that's one answer. The second answer, one is that it's soreif, which is not really accepted la halacha because we hold it folate, shishim. The third answer is which is normally done, is ein ben yomo. That you wait till the pot is 24 hours old, or the spoon, or whatever became treif. And then, the whole reason that the chazal required kashering is a gzeira otu ben yomo. But that's when it went in fresh. But when it's going in as stale, because what happens is when you kasher it, the stale flavor goes out into the agala water. And now you have agala water with stale, no sintam of kam flavor. And then it goes back into the spoon. That we're not concerned about. Because that's nothing talafgam eikara, and there was no gzera on that. And the same thing will be true if you kasher from within. If you kasher a pot that's 24 hours old, so the stale flavor goes out into the water, goes back in, and the fact that it went back in doesn't concern us because it's nothing talafgam eikara. Originally it was nothing talafgam rather than a fresh flavor converting into non-fresh flavor. So the Ramah writes, both in Yoredeya, it's quoted in Yoredeya, I'm not sure if it's quoted in Aruch Chaim, I don't remember, that the minhag is to always kasher in Eino ben Yomo. It's safer. It's true, you could rely on shishim. Probably if you're stuck, you could rely on that as well. But the minhag is to always wait till it's an Eino ben Yomo, because there you can't go wrong. Ramon Sif Beis, Sifin Kav Chafalos, Ein Lahag L'Shom Kli, Kol Zman Shehu Ben Yomo. The fourth approach is not Barnat Etera, which only works when you're kashering theoretically from Cholav to Basar. The reason I say theoretically is because the Magen Avraham quotes a minhag that you don't kasher from Cholav to Basar, from Basar to Cholav. You might get confused. It's interesting that the Aruch HaShulchan writes, we never heard of this minhag. Well, but I think it is our minhag, like the Magen Avraham, that we don't kasher from Milchus to Fleishiks, unless you do it across the Pesach. If you're kashering for Pesach anyway, so once you're already kashered for Pesach, you use it whatever you want. But at least theoretically, and we'll see practically in a moment, if you are kashering from Cholav to Basar, so then you have the kul of not bar not to hetera. Right? So those learn Yerodeya, a secondary flavor of tam that's still mutter, and only then does it clash with an iser, so that's mutter. So what happens is I have my milchik pot that I now want to make fleishik, or par, whatever the case is. So the milchik flavor, even if it's a ben yomo, goes out into the water, and then goes back into the walls. So by the time it backs into the walls, it's already a knot by knot by knot, three knots. So now when I cook fleishik in it, that's a very weak flavor of milchiks. It's not a flavor that can cause any kashrus problems, since it's still mutter. It's not strong enough to make a clash with basar. Had it been iser and iser pot, so however weak it is, it's still aser. So you can use that kula. So what emerges from that is that if you're using the approach of shishim, or you're using the approach of not pranat etera, you could even kasher and a ben yomo. Cholov, I didn't say basa b'cholov. It's chalav, I neutralize the chalav, and then I could use it for basar. But the case before, if I have chalav in the walls and then I'm cooking meat, so as soon as it goes out, it clashes, and that's not for not that terror, that's not for not the surah. Because by the time the second knot came around, it already is usher. The way Rabbi Force puts it in his kasher sefer, for the, you know, the kasher's for, kasher's for dummies. So, the way not for not that terror means, not for not that terror means, a secondary flavor, while it's still mutter. That's not for not that terror. And only then does it clash with the usher. So if you take a ben yomo chalav pot, and then you cook meat in it, so you, that's not for not that terror, that's not from the second flavor, it's already usher. Okay, that was not meant as an insult to Rabbi Force, it was meant as an insult to me. Okay, the final approach is also just theoretical, but I only mention it because the Shulchan Aruch mentions it, at least a theoretical possibility, which some Rishonim have, that I did a treaty lemiflat lo bola. And this would also take some doing in order to make it work practically. You throw the kli into a pot, the blia takes a while to get out, and while it's spitting out, it has no opportunity to reabsorb. So according to those Rishonim, if that's what you're relying on, so you gotta make sure to take it out not too cold, not too hot. You gotta leave it in there just enough time so it should repolate all of its blia, and then take it out right away. Very impractical. I don't know how those Rishonim knew exactly when to take it out, but that was one theoretical way of making Hagala work, that I did a treaty lemiflat lo bala. So some had that as long as it's boiling, you don't have to worry. As long as the water's still boiling up, so it's always being polite, and you don't have to worry that it's going to be nivla again. So again, that's more theoretical than practical. I only mention it because the Shulchan Aruch writes that if you're machbid to have shishim, or you're machbid to be ena ben yomo, or you're relying on not the tera, so you don't have to worry about I need to treat a mivla bala, you don't have to be makbid to take it out like right away or whatever. Okay. That said, so practically we have three aces for kashrut. Shishin, and a binyomo, and not for not that day. Practically, we have three aces for kashrut. And a binyomo, shishin, and not for not that day. The others are more theoretical, but we don't pass them that way. La halacha, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramo have a surprising stock in some Tufan base concerning Chomish and Pesach. They're right. Everybody knows from Rabbi Eider that when you kasher for Pesach, if you are kashering, make sure the kli is not 24 hours. It's not within 24 hours. Use for hot chametz, or preferably even not hot, even for anything hot. Because they say when you kasher your sink, turn off the hot water spigot and down below to make sure no one makes a mistake. So you could do irui and wait 24 hours to rely on ena ben yomo, because you're not going to have shishim when you kasher your sink. But the Mechaber and the Ramah never mentioned such a thing. The Mechaber and the Ramah say that when you're kashering for Pesach, as long as it's before the fourth hour, you can rely on not for not that Torah. Right here I am, let's say I'm kashering my sink, which is the most practical example of modern kashering with liquid medium, because most of us don't kasher, Baruch Hashem, we have to afford the other sets of silverware. So you do Iroi on the sink, and it still has fresh hot chametz, nivla in it, right? So the chametz is going to come out into the water and go back in. But so what? It's not for not that terah. So by the time Pesach comes around, it's mutter flavor that already was weakened. But this is very shocking, because the Mechaber and the Ramah paskin regarding all the other laws of kashrus, that chametz is isura bala. And that's why the Mechaber generally holds that, let's say, something is nivla in a dry way for chametz, you need libun. He was only makel concerning a machvas, because the rush is makel for a machvas the whole year. But when it comes to, let's say, a spit that you toasted bread on or whatever, or you a toaster oven where you put bread directly on it, so with no oil, there machab rolls you need libun. So how come here he says that it's not for not that teir is good enough? So the Rebbe Halacha raises this as a problem. And he raises, Tarachim. So blatant stira in the Shulchan Aruch, that regarding the laws of kashering, he's being makel in terms of how to kasher hagala-wise, but concerning what kind of kashering you need, he's machmir and says that it's not menati surah. So because it's a question on the Shulchan Aruch, so many other poskim, including the Mishnah Berurah, recommend that you really shouldn't rely on this psak, and you should, lechachila at least, only kasher things for Pesach once they're at least 24 hours old, even if you're doing it before Pesach. However, b'di'evit, many poskim are makel, because that's what the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah say. So that means, for example, that if you're kashering your sink and you blow it and by accident used it for Ad Chametz, it's been 24 hours and now Yom Tov is coming, either you'll have to use a liner or you can kasher it. So many poskim are thinking are makel to kasher it even within 24 hours. The line of the Mechav and the Ramah, since many, many Rishonim hold a Teira Bala, even though it seems to be somewhat difficult in terms of consistency. There are those who attempt an answer, but it's a difficult question.
I understand.
Yeah, because the Ramah says the only kasher ain't a ben yomo. So the Taz says even by a terabala. But what happens to Hilchos Pesach? With Hilchos Pesach, we don't at least more than Machab and Ramah. You don't have to be makpid ben yomo. So I don't know how to put those two together. Okay. How long do you have to keep the water in? How long do you have to keep the kli in? So this is a machlokas rishonim, whether plita is instantaneous or whether it takes some time. Obviously, those who hold ayid the treaty lemiflat lo bala hold that there's an ayid the treaty, that at some point in time where you have to be polite, it sounds like it's not instantaneous. But the Torah writes it's instantaneous. You throw something in, take it out right away. And many later achronim write that that's the minhag olam. But that's what everybody does. They don't mock it to keep it there forever. But that's a little bit of a scary minhag olam, because many, many Rishonim, including the Rashba and the Rambam, right, that you have to keep it in there until such time as you could be Mishayer, that I had a chance to be Polik. So, how are you supposed to be Mishayer? So, if you know what it means, you got to keep it in there for a bit of time. The postmen don't give a shear. But to dunk it in, take it right away, even though the Torah allows it, and the Shulchan Aruch Rav and the Pri Chodesh both verify that position, that's allowed, that's the minhag olam. But it's a questionable minhag olam. We better to leave it in there for a while. The poskim do say that you shouldn't leave it in there for too long, because there are those who say that it spits out and then reabsorbs. And even though we're only kashering neim and yomos, it's not really a problem. But lechachila to have it reabsorb, better not to. So they say you leave it in there, but not forever. Leave it in. I don't know how long. They don't give a shear. So no one holds your hand over here. 30 seconds, a minute, something like that, and then you take it out. And it's best not to leave it in for too long. Yes.
Aren't the poskim that say that you put a lock in there so the lock absorbs the whatever it absorbs, and it doesn't really absorb into the sides of the lock or whatever you're boiling it in?
I don't know. I'm not familiar. I don't know if that's the reason why the rock they put in to boil it over.
But when you put it in for utensils, it says...
I'm not familiar. I don't know. I haven't heard that. If you show me, it would be good. Show me inside. I thought that this machloki should depend on the Chamuri Daniel. That's quoted by the Pitzchei Shuvah. This is also the Hagolas Kalim posted as well. From Simon Kufhei, Tifchat Uchet. The Chamuri Daniel writes against the Prima Gadim that Blia is not instantaneous. The Prima Gadim writes that, let's say I throw in a fleshka onion into a milchka frying pan, and I put it in for a second, and then I take it out. So the Prima Gadim writes, so it causes problems. Whatever the problem is, it causes right away. And the Chamuri Daniel says, no, Blia takes some time. It doesn't give a shear. But if you took it out right away, you don't have a problem. Let's say you put a hot meatball on your milk sink or something. Right away, you picked it up. So the Chamuri Daniel is not a problem. Remember of David Miller, Shlita, in Gruss, he told us it's Chamuri Daniel. So he said, it's kedai to utilize with tzarif. We wouldn't rely on it directly, but with other snifim lahakel, you would rely on it. So that seems to be the issue. Although there, they're talking about blia, here we're talking about plita. But it could be related. It could be that the point of the Chamuri Daniel, that blia is instantaneous, maybe plita is also instantaneous. It's not instantaneous. Blia is also not. The point of the Prima Gadim, that it's instantaneous, so that would be fit well with the Shit Sator, that plita is instantaneous. The Shara Tzion, I didn't resort to my notes, and Simon Tufnum Beis, Oz Gimel, so he writes that it's Tov L'Hachmir to keep it in there for a while. So he does recommend it. The Mishnah Berurah already, the Shara Tzion recommends it. Okay. There is a minhag to put cold water on something after you kasher it. So we mentioned briefly last week that very difficult to understand why you have to do that. But it's quoted by many, many, many Rishonim. Most of them don't give reasons. So Rav Adi Yosef in the Yechav Adas, he writes, I just saw this recently, others have this as well, that it's a Zeichel HaMikdash. That's what he mentioned. In the Beit HaMikdash, he used to do that. In Riku Shtifa, so we do that too. It's certainly not Ma'akev. If you don't put the cold water on, it's not Ma'akev. The reason why it might be a very good lechatchila, even though the pastus is only some kind of zecher, is because Rashi has a very unique shita. Rashi holds that when you do hagola, so what's happening is that right now nothing happens, but you're setting up a situation that when you put the cold water on, all the plitha goes out into the cold water. So for Rashi, the tonin is crucial. That's what does the trick. The Haggadah just is kind of like softens up the kli, shall we say, softens up the blia. And when you put the cold water on, the plitha comes rushing out. So according to Rashi, it's Medina. But all the other folks can reject that. La halacha. I'm sorry? It's not Rashi on the Gemara. I think I'm pretty sure it's not. I think it's the Sefer Ora, one of those Sefer Pardes. I'll try to track it down for you. I got it straight from the Sefer Golski. Okay, let's now move on to a discussion of materials, the time we have left. All the issues of the degrees of kashrus, this is straight Shulchan Aruch, we can't cover everything. Kibola Kaspolto, Kli Rishon requires Kli Rishon, Iwari requires Iwari, Klishen requires Klishen. Just wanted to be Moirer that even though in Yerodeh the big machlokes for the Klishen is Mavli or not, but the bottom line is that at least when it comes to Pesach, probably Shari Surim too. We're Machmi. But if something's nivla into a Klishen, we've got to do Hagala, at least in a Klishen. That's what you see from Simon Tafman Base. Okay. Let's start with the kasherables. So that's easy. The Torah says metals are kasherables. Moshe Feinstein points out that even the new metals, even though it's not written explicitly, but these are also kasherable, aluminum and the like, kasherable. Wood, kasherable, provided that it doesn't have any great nooks and crannies that you can't clean out well, because if it does, then you're stuck, because you can't do agala, because it's dirty. You can't do libun, it will burn. So, but theoretically, eight is kasherable. Stone, we paskin, is kasherable, and stoneware is not stone. So we'll get to that later, but stoneware is not stone. So stoneware is not kasherable. It's, the crock pots are usually stoneware, but that's nothing to do with stone. So it's, well, by stone, you mean real stone. So that theoretically is kasherable. The non-kasherable. So the classic non-kasherable, of course, is cheres. The Gemara in Sochim, on the Lamed Amud Beis, quotes the famous expression that a Torah yidal to cheres, she'eino yotze mi ledofyo la'olam. So you can't kasher earthenware. The Gemara points out, based on a Shaka Vitaria, which we're not going to go into now, that covered earthenware is also cheres, meaning if you have earthenware base covered by either a layer of metal, according to the position of some Rishonim, or a layer of glass, according to others, lamaisa or machos both. That earthenware that's covered by metal or glass is also a halacha of earthenware. The Gemara had a suffix because maybe the metal or the glass takes over here. Maybe it never gets to the cheres, but they brought riots that the cheres is bolea, it gets all the way through, because they actually see it on the other side, that it's wet, midaisi. So once it's cheres, hatori idat li cheres sheni yosin dofilol. Sir Rav Tendler, that's the next point. Sir Rav Tendler noted, in an interesting way, that it's not true. It is true for Hagala. It's not true in absolute terms that there's no way to kasher cheres. Because the Gemara earlier indicates that if you have a tanur that requires libun as a result of a certain way you used it, so theoretically you should be able to kasher it. Because you'll heat it up from the inside, you'll get the tanner nice and hot, even though it's cheres, and it will work. The Gemara records on Lamed Omer Aleph that Rav smashed all of his kelim before Pesach, because he held that Chomesh Arul of Pesach was Medina, and he was worried that, not just as a knas, and he was worried that after Pesach, that chametz, which violated Bali Rav Ali Matzion, which would be Chametz Arul Pesach, would then, actually, Bali Rav Ali Matzion, I'm not sure if it would be over, but it would be considered to be Medina, Chametz Arul Pesach, and then would go out into the kosher food, and then it would make a trace. So the only option by a Kli Cheres is to break them. So the Gemara says, why not use the trick of putting them in the oven? Because the Gemara says you can kasher a Cheres oven with Libun. So the Gemara says that Chayes Alei Mishim Depach, that you're going to put Kliseret into an oven. You're going to take it out before it gets hot enough, because it's going to break. You're worried that it's going to break. So therefore, we don't allow it. Midrabanan, even though if you left it in there, minatora, it would accomplish libanan, it would be kosher. But we don't allow it midrabanan. Similarly, midrabanan, we don't allow filling up the cheres pot with coals, because we're afraid you'll take out the coals too early. The Shulchan Aruch writes, based on the Gemara, that if you have a very strong type cheres clean, and you fill it up with coal, so then it would be allowed. So what the Gemara has basically is that you can kasher cheres through libun, theoretically, but normally there's no way to do that because we're afraid the chayah is dil mapak. So does that have any practical ramifications? Is there any way to apply that kashering of cheres to zmanenu? Well, so b'di'evet is questionable, because it could be that Zeir the Rabbanan was even b'di'evet. That's a machlokes of poskim, I believe. But
why does the Torah say it could break?
Right. So that's Tosaf Kasha. Basically, quote the Gemara in Zvachim. Why do you have to break the Kalim and the Migdash? Just Kasha them. So the Gemara says you have to put it into a Kivshon Ha'esh. And they didn't have kivshonos in Yerushalayim because it would cause so much pollution. I think that's the reason. So it wasn't practical. But theoretically, you could do it. That's also close in the Gemara in Zvachim. That's Tzadivah. So how did that relate to Halacha L'maisa? So many, many Rishonim are mechalek between a Tanur and a Kivshon. Tosus quotes in the Gemara in Zvachim that theoretically you would have been able to put the cheres in a kivshon in Yerushalayim, and the only reason we don't do it is because they didn't have kivshonos in Yerushalayim. That's why by karbonos, in kli cheres, the carbon was cooked in kli cheres, you break it because there's no practical way to put it in a kivshon. But if you had a kivshon, so many, many Rishonim say that you're allowed to kasher it that way. Aye, but you're afraid you'll take it out. So the you know, Nosei Kalim, the Taz, and others, many explain that the pshat is Mishnah Berurah quotes this as well in Siman Tafnun Aleph. A kivshon is not just a tanner. A kivshon, a kiln where they used to make pottery. It gets up to 2,000 degrees or something like that. So as soon as you put it in, if it's going to break, it's going to break right away. And if it didn't break, so it's shkoyach, it's kasher. It's so hot that it's kasher right away. So there's no chash, chayez nilapaki, you'll take it out too early, because the temperature is so hot. But a regular tano, it only gets up to whatever, somewhere around 1,000. So there, it's not going to make it so hot right away, because you have to wait till that gets to 1,000 degrees. So we're worried you're going to take it out too early. Now, there are some Mishonim as collected in the Sefer Gol Kalim Perek Gimel under the entry of Cheres, who hold that there's no difference. The Gzeir is on a Kivshan too. And the only reason they would have allowed it theoretically in Mishalayim is because Ein Shavus is Mikdash, which enters a whole other discussion about whether Ein Shavus HaMikdash only applies on Shabbos or even by Shari Surim. But we wouldn't use it outside the Mikdash. But the majority of Psak, and that's the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tafnun Aleph, that you could kasher Klicheres with a Kivshon. That's what Rav Tendel said. Torah Ida Klicheres. It's not quite as absolute as you would think. So, here I, as Chatoy Ani Maskir, I don't understand the following nekudos that I'm mentioning to you, but I throw it out as a point of iyun to please get the answer to this. Tosu says on the daf here that we don't have so much time, so we have to just do it outside. I understand. You could cash it with a kitchen, right? So why are you telling me I thought I'd eat off the cherish and you don't think you're going to hold them? Tell me, break the kli. Okay, break the kli because you don't have a kitchen. But why does the Gemara say, it's a very stark terminology, which is not true. It can come out through a kivshon. So Tosa says, that's not coming out of the kli. That's a new kli. If you're putting it into a kivshon, so that's like panu chadoshos ba'olakam. So that's not yotze midei dof yo. That's a new kli. At least from a certain perspective, it's a new kli. So we could rightfully say that if you have the old kli, you can't get the bli out. So that's what Tosafot writes. The point that I don't understand is the following. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the Tshuva, where he discusses, I think it's about China. It's in the packet. You have that Tshuva in the packet. I forget what he's referring to. He writes, based on the chiluk we saw last week from the Ra'al, Hatorah ha'id al kli cheres she'enu yotzim yidach yorom.
Correct.
When you're kashering through flita, meaning a hagala is not going to work for kli cheres. Ah, using libun. That's not yotzim yidach yorom. That's sreifa. So there is no steer to that line of yotzim yidach yorom. What's bothering me is how come he doesn't pull it to Tosis? So it gives a whole different answer. Tosis says because it's a new kli. Moshe Feinstein writes because it's not plita, it's sreifa. How come he just ignores that Tosis? So I must be missing something. Moshe Feinstein quotes Tosefta and Tosefta Kalim from left field, so obviously.
You're not putting it into a kishon, you're just taking the outside source and putting it into
it. No. This is talking about putting into a kishon. Putting into a kishon, Tosis says that's kli chadash, and that's why it's not yotzim yidafyo, it's a new kli. And Moshe says that the pshat is because it's sreifa and not plita. I don't know how to put those two together. As another answer, I understand. I just don't understand why he didn't quote the Tosis. Okay, so the bottom line is that you could put cheres into a kifshan. So is there any practical ramifications to that? So Rabbi Tendel said yes, because they have kilns nowadays, and they reglaze china in kilns. Of course, it costs. But if you have a very expensive set of china, and you want to preserve a $1,000 set of china, so you might be willing to pay the $300 to reglaze it. So you send it to a service that reglazes the china in a kiln, and that's the temperature that would be required here, certainly above the temperature. So you could literally go back to the heter of kishon. And even though they're not going to agree to the heter of kishon, but the shulchan aruch relies on it. So we have kishonos nowadays. The reason it's not so practical is because who wants to pay whatever, however much money it takes to have a kishon? But if you have the very expensive china, where usually the shayos come up, so it might be relevant. And then Rav Tendler had a bigger chiddush, which is debatable, but I have no other makoros for you other than the fact that Rav Tendler said it l'maisa, and he does it, and Rabbi Neuberger was just mefakpek. He didn't say no, but he just pointed out that it's not so clear-cut, and that is tekasha china in a self-cleaning oven. So apparently Rav Tendler, for Balei Tshuva, who have tekasha de china, which for now we're assuming is cheres, we'll comment on that briefly in a moment before we conclude. So he farms out all the china to his kashrus committee, and all the women of Muncie, they put one or two plates next to each other in the oven. They run through a self-cleaning cycle, and he treats that as legal. The temperature certainly is. The reason that it's a chiddush is because it's a regular oven. It's not a kishon. Ah, so maybe you'll take it out. You can't, because a self-cleaning cycle has a lock. So that was Rav Tendler's cheshbon. So Rabbi Neuberger pointed out the davar chadash, and it's not quite a kishon, but from everything that I've seen, the kishon is better, not because it's so hot, because that's the temperature you need, because it's so hot that there's no chance of you being able to take it out before the job is done. But if you have 1,000 degrees, where theoretically you wouldn't be able to, you would have no chash of taking it out in advance, it sounds like even a regular oven would be allowed. So it sounds like a very good cheshbon, but I must share with you, I did not get a chance to really consult with some of the other poskei yeshiva to see what they hold about this, but it seems like you make a very good case for that. So he does it l'maisa, and he thought that was a better cooler than relying, as we'll see in a moment, on Moshe Feinstein with 3 times a bell after 12 months, because that's questionable. But if this is mamish libum, so that would be the best way to do it. In Simen Tov Nun Aleph, just in your own studies, take a look, you'll see there are other ways to kasha cheres if it was only nivla yidei tzonin. Right, so the only time that you can't kasher al yidei agola or kli cheres if it was nivla yidei chamin, but it was nivla yidei tzonin through 24 hours, but then you can kasher. So you'll see that at the end of Simen Tov Nun Aleph. So it's not totally absolute. The Gemara says tori yidei kli cheres sheni yisrael shel olam means when in hot, but when in cold, then that's a different story. Okay, so that's in terms of cheres. Now, in China. So I did a little bit of mother research on this, if you will, because everyone was confusing me with the terms and I was just going batty. So I went in encyclopedias and I did a little online and I sent some emails to people. So just some terms. Porcelain is china. Let no one tell you otherwise. Porcelain is china. China is like a brand name for porcelain because they used to make porcelain in China. So that's why they call it china. So what is porcelain? So here's the problem. So I'll quote to you from my man in the field. Here's the problem. This is from Professor David Martin. Okay. An X-ray diffraction test of a porcelain proves that it is a mixture of small crystallites and glass. That's the problem. Glass, as we'll see, many Rishonim hold is not boleya. Regular crystalline structure, these things usually are boleya. So here we have a mixture. So it's right in the gray zone. So there are two types of porcelain. There's porcelain that's called hard paste porcelain, without boring with the details, which in industry is called non-porous. And then there's something called soft paste porcelain, which in industry is porous. And that's why they put a glaze on it to try to, it shouldn't be so porous. So there were many achronim who held that porcelain is not boleya. So it never needs kashrut. And they were basically going with the approach that it's glass-like. It makes a lot of good sense on the hard porcelain. That's the better china. Soft porcelain was fake china that they used to make in Europe because they couldn't figure out how the Chinese made it. So they had a different recipe. Soft porcelain, according to industry standards, is boleya. So the Pri Chadash himself already quotes this kind of idea. He says, first of all, I don't know, maybe porcelain is boleya. And even if it's not, but the fake porcelain is. And he writes to the fakers. He says, they're mezayfin. So you can't be makel on porcelain because some of it is boleya, and you never know. You're going to say, you don't have to kasha china, so you're going to turn around and make a new china, which they did. But it wouldn't be china because that was made in China. That was made in Europe. So the bottom line is that although there were many achronim who were makel to treat porcelain as glass, and assuming that glass doesn't need kashering, which in and of itself is a machlokas, but assuming that it doesn't. So they allowed the usage of it for Pesach and the whole year, for Basar and Chalav and Chametz and Pesach. But it seems like the consensus of the poskim is that we're machmir on porcelain. Either because the gzeira of the Pri Chadash, or because we're worried that that it's boleya a little bit. That even though industry calls it non-porous, but maybe they have different standards of what they call non-porous than halacha. This derech agav, I don't want to dwell on this at all, but this is a very sticky point in kashering. I always thought the pashtus was that kashering is real. That the Torah assumes that molecules go in. And is there a class here? The molecules go in, and we have to get them out. So the Radvaz, concerning porcelain, he did an experiment. How did he find out that according to him, porcelain is boleya? He took a piece of porcelain, threw it into some soup or something. He weighed it before he put it into the soup, and he weighed it after he put it into the soup. And he said it weighed slightly more. So he was assuming that molecules are real. A tender was just ma'orer that a Glanias Daito, according to his researches, he doesn't think that if you'll be able to discover any kind of difference in weighing between a pot that was cooked in and a pot that was not cooked in. So I don't know. I always assumed it was a metzias. Rav Tendler assumed that it was a gzeiras hakasa. But it's molecules, right? The molecules are going to have some weight, right? It's not mamosho, but it's not poreach bavir. It has matter to it. So he was saying, even if you take the most precise instrument, I don't know. So I throw it as an open question. So the bottom line is that porcelain were machmeran to treat it as cheres. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that as well in Simetov analysis. That's the consensus of the poskim. And therefore, we assume that china is unkashrable. China is unkashrable. So are there any coolers for china? Let me go two more minutes over. I'm sorry that I'm holding you.
There's no question for recording.
I know, but we can't go over. Maybe in the Chazara, that's on our own. This we have to stick to the schedule. At least very close to it. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you have to put together a few tshuvas here in order to see the big picture. One tshuva you have in the packet, we're not gonna see it inside. I just want to quote to you the makor is in Chelek Beis Yerodei Asim Mem Vav. But the first tshuva, which is also crucial to see, is in Chelek Aleph Yerodei, and I don't remember the sin. It goes as follows: there is a Bala Itur, and the Bala Itur is quoted in the Torah in Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph, quoting Yerushalmi. That says that if you have Truma Bizman Hazeh, the Rabbanan, either Trumas Yerek, or if you hold that Kedusha Saras was a bottle, and it was Nibla and a Kali Cheres, you could kashu three times. So the Bala Yitzhar says, if I wasn't afraid of my Rebbeim, it's interesting because he was afraid, but if I wasn't afraid of my Rebbeim, I would apply this to all the Rabbanans, And even an Eino Ben Yomo of a Daraisa, because that's also Darabon. That's the Bala Yitur. The Rashba wasn't willing to go so far. He was willing to apply it to all the Rabbanans that Ein Lahem Iker Min HaTorah. If they don't have any Iker Min HaTorah, but if something has an Iker Min HaTorah, it's just an Eino Ben Yomo, the Rashba was not willing to be made. So La Halacha, simply speaking, we don't accept the Bala Yitur. To a Kasher, a Klicheres Eino Ben Yomo three times. We only accept the Rashba's leniency, that if Ein Lo Iker Min HaTorah, you can Kasher it. That's why they say a Chomech Ovelov HaPesach, that's Balua and a Kli, you can kasher three times. You can kasher three times the Kli Cheres that had Bishalakam in it. Shulchan Aruch and Zimukov Yugimel quotes that. But not like the Bala Yitur. But a Snif Lahakel, the Poskim do oftentimes utilize it, because they treat it as a mainstream position, even though it's not accepted La Halacha, because that would be the Pashtus of the Yerushalmi. So what Rav Moshe does is as follows. If you have a case, of a Shatat Chak Godel. In his case, the Shatat Chak Godel is the case of Bali Tshuva, who had an expensive set of china, and if you can make it too hard for them, so it'll be very difficult to have their transition into Shmiras HaMitzvos. So he first starts off with that Bali Itur. Kasha three times. He throws in, maybe porcelain is not Bolea, after all, there were those who said that. Look at that, he throws in as another sniff. But the main sniff is the Bali Itur, together with the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi had the following shayla. Someone cooked chametz in a kli that was used a Pesach dikke dish in a kli that hadn't been used for chametz for 12 months. That was the shayla of the Chacham Tzvi. Now in Siman Tov Mem Zayin, the Mechaber and the Ramah have machlokis whether no same tam lefgam is mutter b'di'evet on Pesach or osir b'di'evet on Pesach. The Mechaber is Mekel, and the Ramah is Machmi. So according to the Ramah, if you cook in a Chametz Tikapat on Pesach B'dievet, even though it's already 24 hours old, it's awesome. That's the way we pass from the Maisa. So going with that assumption, like the Ramah, the Chacham Tzvi says, that if it's 24 hours old, but if it's a year old, so then the Tam is not potent anymore. It's worse than Nosin Tam Lefgam. It doesn't have any flavor whatsoever. He admits that the molecules are still there. It's interesting. He admits that it's still there. He brings a raya from Mishnah and Kalim. But it doesn't give any flavor. It's not even nice with Dam of Gam. And his raya is, of course, from Yayin Nesech. Because that's the halacha by Yayin Nesech, that if it's in a kli for 12 months, you're allowed to use it for kosher wine, even if you leave the kosher wine in there for 24 hours. So it'll be a kavish to a bushel situation. It's not a problem. And he writes that even though that's cold, this is hot, doesn't matter. Same thing. But it's not mistaber that Tom should remain there forever.
3 days.
What is it?
9 days of 3 days.
12 months.
No,
I'm not talking about Kashmir.
Public.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. So the Chacham Tzvi writes the following. So that's a pretty good trick. So let the Gemara say every time you have a Kli Cheres, right? So wait 12 months and you'll have no problem. And how can the Gemara never said that? It says, right, because it only works for Pesach, and it doesn't work by Shari Surim. Atmaha, Pesach is worth. So he says the following. Concerning Pesach, Eina Ben Yomo is Aser. Eina Ben Yomo is Aser. So if we allow you to use it after 12 months, no one's going to get confused. They'll realize within 12 months it's Aser, even with the Eved, and after 12 months, then it's totally Mutter.
After 12 months, it's Pesach.
However you work it. You know, you used it for chametz 12 months ago and now it's Pesach. More than 12 months ago.
Is that because the dinner again, Yain Yisach, the Atom was not us, it's also because of the external something else, because the time is Pesach becomes us, or Pesach not because it's Kisser itself, and Yain Yisach, the same thing, because the boy makes the Yain Yisach.
I don't think he touches upon that included. But by Shari Surim, says the Chacham Tzvi, by Shari Surim, no same time of Gam is mutter b'di'evet. It's only us l'chachila. Says the Chacham Tzvi, if you're going to allow people l'chachila to use it after 12 months, then they're going to come to use it l'chachila within 12 months. Because after all, it's not really so usher, because b'di'evet is mutter. So it'll lead to an error, it'll lead to a violation of that din the Rabbanan. Even though it's a gzera, it's a gzera. So it's cool achar gzera. This is necessary to protect that original gzera. If you're going to allow people l'chachila to use it after 12 months, they'll come to use the lechachila within 12 months, and that we can't have, because that's going to destroy the whole Zera of Chazal. Okay, this is the Chacham Tzvi. I don't have to be miyasher the Chacham Tzvi. Okay, this is what he says. So the bottom line is that the Chacham Tzvi was only mekel for Pesach. Which is why, by the way, it answers the obvious question. The case of the Chacham Tzvi was the shayla of the Bidyevet. They cooked chametz in it. Right? So Bidyevet, even after 24 hours, it's not a problem. Yeah, because the Chacham Tzvi was talking about chametz. That's why he needed the kula 12 months. So along comes Reb Moshe, and he writes that even though the Chacham Tzvi only said it concerning Pesach, but Reb Moshe says, I'm prepared to be mekel b'shas adchak b'hefted meruba for shari surim. And his logic is that the nature of the gzera of the Chacham Tzvi is alechadchila, lest you get confused. So he says it's much like, for example, the Gemara Chulin writes, you shouldn't use a shechita knife to cut meat with, because you have to clean it off in between, and you might forget. So therefore you should have another knife. And let's say a shechet comes to me and says, you know, all the stores are closed and I don't have another knife, and this is my only knife, can I cut meat with it? So it stands to reason that that kind of tzorech to have three knives, that if you're really stuck, so then the posek would say, so clean it off and use it for meat, but don't do it again, get yourself another knife. So says Reb Moshe, so when you have a very big tzorech, like a hefsed meruba, that kind of decree of don't do this, let you get confused and use it in the wrong time, that would not apply. That's the logic of Reb Moshe, that the Chacham Tzvi would apply here, hefsed meruba. So together with the Chacham Tzvi, after 12 months, and the Itur, three times kashering, so that's Reb Moshe's famous kula, three times kashering, with the Chacham Tzvi's 12 months. But the ones who came after Ramosha noted that Ramosha was only makel the tzira of takana fashov. So with the Baal Tshuva, and the Rabbi Neuberger quoted a story that he had that shaila with the Baal Tshuva, and he was about to be makel, but he asked Rabbi Alfred, I just saw three Mercedes in their driveway, so they're not really so poor, so they could afford to buy another set. So Rabbi Nissen Alpert told him the Rosh Hashiva had gizokt that the psak takana fashovim it's mutter. So Rav Neuberger told him, okay, you can kasher it three times. He probably assisted them in doing it. And then he said that he found out from other circles that it's good that he was mekel, because the wife wasn't so into this religion. And if the psak would have been usher, then the whole tshuva would have gone down the drain. So he smiled and he said, oh, this is an Alfred, that's terror. He knew what was a necessary psak for the right situation. Reb Moshe Feinstein in the early Tshuva, and this is what I just wanted to share with the Olam, Reb Moshe doesn't really agree with the Chacham Tzvi. It's clear from the early Tshuva in Chelek Aleph, he holds the Chacham Tzvi's extension. Okay, but he was mekel b'dieved in that case, right? Okay. Reb Moshe says, really we shouldn't follow Chacham Tzvi, because to learn out from Yayin Nesach, which is a derabanan and kol, to Shari Surin, which is starts out as deraisa and hat, well, Yayin Nesach is actually the Raisa, but it's Sam Yayinim. So it's not so clear. But here he was willing to inspire the Chacham Tzvi because of the Kana Teshav. So I just wanted to note that Rav Adi Yosef, in a Chelek Aleph Simen Vav in Yerodea, so he was also Mekel, the Shas of Chak Gadol. It was a case of a hospital that was under the auspices, well, it wasn't under the auspices, that was the problem. It was supposed to be feeding kosher foods, and then it turned out they were mamash feeding treif. It was the only Jewish hospital in Cairo. Funny story. And the shul was written in 1949. So he wanted to kasher the kelim and make them become kosher again. But it was all porcelain. It was all china. So he said, if we're going to tell them to throw it out, it's going to be very hard for the rabbanim to convince them to go kosher. So Rav Adi Yosef, based on other sneifim, which we're not going to go into, he was mekel without the 12 months to kasher three times, once it's an Eino Ben Yomo, relying primarily on the Baal HaItur, but then he had some other cheshbonos. But practically speaking, we don't do that. If there's no takana teshavim or the disaster of the hospital there to kasher china, we don't kasher it at all. But you do have that possibility of the putting it back in a kiln or the self-cleaning oven, according to Rav Tendler. I just want one other word about a cheres-like substance, which is not quite cheres, and it's not quite china, and that's enamel. So here, well, again, a little mada, because I was going crazy, so I had to have someone explain this to me. Enamel is metal with something like china that's molded to it. That's what enamel is. That's why your ovens are enamel. All dishwashers were enamel. It's a metal base. And on top of that is a coating of something that's very much like china. That's why if you look in such an oven, it looks, the surface has pretty much the consistency of china. So this is interesting because the poskim all note that the ones who made enamel, they never really told anybody how they make it. So the poskim didn't know what it was. So Rav Eliezer says, well, it seems like it's metal, so you can kasher it. And other poskim said, it seems like it's keras, so you cannot kasher it. So as many possibilities as you have in halacha, you have as to how to kasher enamel. You can't. You can with agala. You can three times. You need liban chamor or you need liban kal. The Pitzchei Tshuva quotes the Chassam Sofer that you need liban kal. I think that's, if I'm not mistaken, it's a quote from Kuf Aleph, the first one, I think, that you need liban kal. The Mishnah Berura, and you have to have the right one because this is the Madura Basra. He writes that the achra of many poskim that he's aware of is that they allow kashering enamel the rest of the year, but they don't allow it on Pesach. And Rabbi Neuberger indicated that that psak seems to be pretty mikubal. The Mishnah Berura quotes poskei zmano. So just noting that it is a Ramosha Feinstein did not hold that way. He held enamel you cannot kasher at all. But the Mishnah Berura has made that there are many poskim who allow kashering enamel the rest of the year. Yeah, that's Ishmael. Okay. The rest of the year they both call it a mile, but not on Pesach. The final word is, so that's going to be another complexity, I'll set up probably Willy, concerning ovens, because many of the non-self-cleaning ovens, and maybe even the self-cleaning ones, but it doesn't matter, self-cleaning is already Libun, but the non-self-cleaning ones are enamel. So besides all the other complications of kashering, but it seems to be maybe a non-kasherable, if it is a non-kasherable, so that's one of the other complications about ovens. The final word is about glass. Just very briefly, the Mechaber writes the glass is not boleh. It's based on an Ovis Derb Nosson that says so. Glass is not boleah. The only problem is that the Ovis Derb Nosson says, ain't a boleah, ain't a pole. So what's the problem? If it's not boleah, so well, what do you need it to be poleed for? There's nothing there. No, it's talking about real glass. The real glass. Ain't a boleah, ain't a pole. So the Gra takes it out. Okay, makes life easy. Ain't a boleah. But those who have the gear says that some learn, it's boleah drop. And that drop, that is bolea, it's not pole through regular hagola, but it's going to come out little by little. So that's a disaster. So that's why that raya is not so conclusive. But at first glance, it sounds like pretty good. And according to Mada, it's correct, but okay. Next term Mada, because glass is non-porous. Glass is a non-porous substance. That's why I quoted from the Cheres that porcelain, alpimada, is a mixture between Cheres and glass. That's why it's so halakhically complex. So the Mechaber is Mekel, and the Raji Yosei verifies that's the Sfari Minig, and if you have a Pyrex pot and a Dorlex pot, they're all glass, and it doesn't matter how hot you use it, it doesn't matter if you're roasting it, it's all kasherable. The Ashkenazim are Machmir, the Ramo, because there are two other sheets concerning glass, of which the Ramo is Machmir for one of them. Either it's not kasherable at all because it's just like Cheres because it's made from sand, right, a mud face, take sand you make into glass. So it has the Lach of Cheres, which is the sheet of the Truma Sedeshen, and the Ramah seems to be following it. Or it's theoretically kasherable, but you're afraid it's going to break. So therefore, you can't kasher it because of Exer Derabanan. So the Ramah writes, Yesh Machmirin. So we don't do it. How far did the Ramah go? So I just wanted to point out, Kayadua, everybody knows that some people have one set of glasses, some people have two sets of glasses. So the Prima Gadim writes that the Ramah's Chumra only extends to Pesach. And many other Achronim write that it applies to all Yisurim. So that's that complexity there. How far the Ramah go? Only for Pesach or by Shari Yisurim. But the Vaji Yosef, he wants to make a compromise. That the Ramah is being Machmir for the Shita, the Vaji Yosef talks to the Ashkenazim. The Ramah is being Machmir for the Shita that it might break. So the Vaji Yosef wants to suggest that even for Pesach, and certainly for Shari Yisurim, you could kasher a Pyrex pot. Because a Pyrex pot is hard glass, it doesn't break on heat. That's what it's meant to take heat. So he has that serif, assuming that the Ramah is only being machmir for the sheet that it might break. If you assume the Ramah is being machmir, that glass is like cheres, so that cooler would not apply, which I think is the way other posts can go. If they assume, at least Ashkenazim, they can't kasha glass at all. So you forgive me for going over, just since I don't have the control of the next chavura, so I'm just jamming the end of the materials discussion. Okay.